Welcome to the Marriage Counselor's Corner. Right this way. Your therapist will see you shortly. In the meantime, sit back, kick your feet up on the couch, and get ready to focus on adding very valuable tools to your marriage toolkit. And now your host and marriage counselor, David Taylor.
What's up, guys? This is David Taylor, and I am your host. Welcome back to another episode, episode number 6 of the Marriage Counselor's Corner podcast. And guess what, guys? This is the place where you come to get credible and tangible marriage-related information from a licensed mental health counselor. I'm not a talking head. I actually know what I'm talking about a little bit, okay? Anyway, this is a place where you're going to come to get information about how to take your marriage to the next level. And over the past 19 years of my clinical experience, I've discovered the things that work to make your marriage healthy. So I want you to see these episodes as a masterclass in marriage, where I take a psychological and practical approach to marriage education and enrichment. And like I said, this is episode number 6, and it is my very first Q&A episode. That's right. This episode is going to be a little different because I'm not going to be doing a teaching per se. Now, I will be doing some teaching. Stick around for that. But it's going to be in the form of Q&A. And this is where I get to take and play a few listener-submitted questions and answer them in the form of a mini coaching session. Now, if you know me, if you've been a part of any of our live teachings and group coaching sessions, this is one of my most favorite things to do. I love, 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 love answering questions. Now, I want to be honest, though, and say that I am kind of skeptical in regards to how these episodes will be received. I've found that most people favor Q&A sessions, but they like to be live and present so that they can actually ask questions. And so this is pre-recorded. There may be some live stuff in the future, but right now it's pre-recorded. And so, and I know I originally stated that I would do 2 of these types of episodes per month. But again, I'm kind of skeptical because I don't know how well you guys are going to receive it. So we shall see. Now, if I get a positive response and positive feedback and more questions from you guys, the listeners, then guess what? I'll do more episodes. But if I see that it's not a lot of engagement, these aren't received as well, then I'll probably completely scratch these and just use these Q&A sessions for our membership program that we're going to be presenting at some point in the near future. So we'll see. But for now, this is more of an experimental episode to see how it goes. By the way, I would love to do more of these, but I just don't know. So I'm going to listen to you guys and y'all can tell me if y'all want more of these or not. Okay. Now, before we get started, I do want to give one final word on my approach to these questions, especially given this type of episode. Now, I've gotten a few audio questions and a little more than a few written questions, so I'm going to split it up this episode and do 2 audio questions and then 2 written questions. But I want to try to package my answers to not just speak to the person that asked the question, but I want to speak to more than just that person. I want to speak to the populace as a whole. So my recommendation and challenge for you guys is to not zone out just because I'm answering a question that you may have not asked or even thought to ask. I want you to instead listen for the key that can unlock your particular situation. Because what you'll realize is that there are a lot of revolving themes around many of these questions. So I'll be doing these live. So just be mindful that I want to try to answer these questions to suit more than just the person that asked. Okay, so stay with me. And when we do open up the doors to our Mastering Marriage program, which again, we'll talk about that at a later time, I'll be doing these episodes on a more routine basis, and they will be live for our members. So the members will be able to, you know, log into Zoom or, you know, Facebook. We'll you know, use whatever platform, and you guys will be able to ask questions and then be a part of the discussion and even ask follow-up questions. And then I can ask you follow-up questions. But We'll talk about that more in later episodes. So, now that I have those things out the way, let's get down to some business. So I got four questions I want to answer, and let's start with the first question.
My name is Ray from Orlando, and I have a question. What does it look like to emotionally protect your spouse?
So, the question is, how do you emotionally protect your spouse? Now, this question may sound basic, but I promise you, this question is actually layered. Mainly because when we talk about emotional protection, where do you learn how to emotionally protect someone, right? Like, as a young boy, I didn't learn from a husband how to emotionally protect a wife, right? So I had to have my own assumptions and preconceived notions. But where do you get this information from? This is actually a very challenging space that I see a lot of individuals struggle with. And I will be honest, hear me out. I'm not going to be biased today, okay? So I'm going to say some stuff that y'all may not agree with. And I'm going to say some stuff that's going to rattle some cages. But I promise you, I'm not speaking from an emotional place. I'm speaking from experience and research vetted experience, okay? I want to say this first, before I get down to the nitty gritty with this answer. Men tend to struggle more with the inability to protect their wife, okay? I've seen this time and time again, that men, husbands, tend to struggle more with the emotional protection. They do well with physical protection, right? Got a bunch of gorillas walking around, strong and stiff-necked, but when it comes to the emotional protection, I see that a lot of men struggle with this. They drop the ball in this area, I'm gonna be honest, okay? So let me give you four pointers in terms of how you can deal with this. Not just men, by the way, wives as well. I need y'all listening. I'm gonna give you four pointers, and then I'm gonna give you a resource that can help, okay? So pointer number one is this. Understand the difference between your standard of emotional protection and their standard of emotional protection. Again, we're not taught how to emotionally protect people, right? That's just not a course you take in elementary or middle or high school or even college, like emotional protection. Again, I just did a podcast episode on emotional intelligence. We're not even taught that in school. So, again, we come packaged with our own standard of what emotional protection looks like, what it should feel like, and what you should do to make me feel protected. But guess what? That's my standard. And you're going to come with your standard. Maybe you saw mom and dad do this, or grandparents do this, or uncle and auntie do this, or maybe you ain't seen nobody do it. And all of a sudden, you had to create your standard of what you desire emotional protection to look like based off of a movie, based off of your community, based off of your cultural affiliations, whatever the case may be, you're going to bring your own standard with you. And if you don't understand the difference between your standard and their standard, you're going to have a lot of expectations that you put in front of you for them that they're going to fail at. Okay? So understand the difference between your standard of emotional protection and their standard. What do you require? What do they require? Just because you require X don't mean they're willing, capable, and able to give X. Let them give their own evaluation and assessment of their abilities. Don't just hold them to a standard that they have not agreed to. Okay. Number two, once you understand the difference between your standards and their standards, you have to learn how to be a better protector. Not just according to your standards, by the way, but according to their standards. So once you understand, okay, this is what my spouse requires, this is what they need, because you got to be a student of your spouse. The next thing is you got to learn how to be a better protector according to that standard, right? So if you're a bodyguard and you realize that the president, let's say you're the bodyguard of a president, of the president of the United States, you're not just going to get hired based off of your abilities. There are certain skill sets that you're going to have to need to be good and efficient at your job. He's not going to just hire you because you served in the military. Mm-mm. You got to be the highest of the highest of the highest. And as a spouse, marriage is sacred. You have to be the highest of the highest of the highest when it comes to emotionally protecting your spouse. This is the number one job that I believe husbands should get good at, better at when it comes to improving their position of a husband. Wives, y'all need to do better too, okay? I'm not going to leave y'all out, but the husbands, this is one of the most important positions that a husband will struggle with. Learn how to be a better emotional protector of your wife. Study her, study him, learn what they need, learn what they missed out on, because most of the time, what they missed out on is what they're still looking for, okay? Learn how to be a better protector. And then number three, protect out of discipline, not just when you want to. Protection has to be a mindset. It has to be an attitude. It has to be a daily, deliberate, intentional decision that becomes discipline. And when you discipline yourself and you're committed to doing it consistently, you get good at it. Okay? Protect out of discipline. And then give them permission to give you feedback on how well you are doing at said job. So if you're protecting, give them permission to evaluate how well you do. You can't just say, oh yeah, I'm good at protecting my wife, or I'm good at protecting my husband, without them having some type of feedback. And listen, if they say, you're doing great in this area, but this, the listening part, or when I come home and I just need to share my emotions, you tend to zone out, that part. If they share that with you, don't get defensive. Okay? Or, okay, fair. If you do get defensive, don't give them defensiveness. Be aware that, you know what, I have blind spots, and perhaps this is an area that I need to improve on. Okay? So there are four things that you can do to become a better emotional protector for your spouse. I could do 3 hours, 4 hours of this, but I'm just going to give you those 4 points. I will point to one of the laws in my book, The 37 Laws to Mastering Marriage, and this is where I get a shameless plug, but this book is really good, okay? I'm just going to be honest with you. But The Law of the Safe Place is really good with helping you to understand how to be a better emotional protector. Also, The Law of the Pupil. So if you have my book, if you don't got it, get it. I'll talk about that later, but The Law of the Safe Place, and then The Law of the Pupil. The Law of the Pupil means that you have to be a student of your spouse. Therefore, you have to learn what they need in order to become better at providing said needs. Okay? All right, let's go on to the second question, because I could stay here all day with question number one. Question number two is this, and I'm going to read this one off. In order to have a successful marriage between two somewhat strong-willed, opinionated people, what would be a key factor that they would need to work on in order to have a happy marriage? All right, so this is a good question. In order to have a successful marriage between two strong-willed, opinionated people, what will be a key factor that they will need to work on in order to have a happy marriage? I'm going to give you some points for this question. And thank you for whoever sent that question in. All right, let me go with the first thing that I believe will help you. First is this. Hear me clearly, because I'm going to say some stuff that y'all may not agree with until you hear with your heart. The first point I want to give is this. Lose your individual definition of what a happy marriage looks like. Okay? But wait, there's more. And instead, so I'm not just saying to throw your definition out and just be naked with nothing. Instead, come to the table and co-create what a happy marriage looks like together. See, the problem is most people bring with them what they feel a happy marriage should look and feel like. And then if you're strong-willed, you definitely bring in something that you think is right and therefore truth. And the problem is if you are strong-willed and you bring in your definition of what a happy marriage should look like, and they are strong-willed and they bring in their definition, who right? And who's wrong? Both of y'all? None of y'all? What do you do with that? Right? So the first thing you got to do then is you got to strip yourself of that. Untether yourself from your definition and bring yourself to the table to co-create a definition with your spouse. This then becomes a mutually agreed upon abstract or concept inside of your marriage. And number two, use your strong-willed trait to your advantage. See, I'm strong-willed, okay? I'm self-aware enough to know that I'm strong-willed and I can be stubborn. I can be bullheaded at times, right? And I love to fight for my ideas. And so is my wife. She does the same. She loves to fight for her ideas. Now, imagine if we have an idea that we both see eye to eye on. Imagine that. That increases the chances of the two of us creating synergy, right? So imagine I'm strong-willed, she's strong-willed, and we have an idea that we see eye to eye on. Man, we ain't gonna let that idea fall, right? As a matter of fact, the reason why we have this business is because she had an idea and I had an idea, and we just so happen to have the same idea that we're both strong-willed about. So this thing is churning along because we ain't gonna let it falter. Synergy is the name of the game. You want to create synergy in your marriage. The Bible says it this way: one could put 1,000 to flight, two can put 10,000 to flight. Now think about that, right? That you should be adding at that point, right? No, two creates exponential growth, because really two is three. Y'all missed that. Go read your Bibles to understand what I mean when I say two or three. Where two or three are gathered, y'all can finish the rest, okay? So that's why two could put 10,000 to flight, because there's synergy and a threefold cord is not easily broken, okay? But anyway, we don't have to go there. The point is, think about this from the standpoint of use this trait to your advantage. Leverage it inside of your marriage, okay? Be strong-willed about the things that will maximize your marriage. See, a lot of times we're strong-willed about the things that we want to will into fruition, and it ain't got nothing to do with our marriage. We want to be strong-willed about our egos, about our ideas, about what we think is right or what we think is wrong. And those things ain't got nothing to do with our marriage. But imagine if two people were saying, you know what? We both are some bulldogs. We ain't going to let go once we bite down. But imagine if we bit down on the idea of loyalty or trust or integrity or spiritual intimacy, or any of the other things that you can think of to make your marriage healthy. Imagine if two people are biting down on that, not letting go, right? Imagine that. Now you're creating something better than you once had, okay? So lose your own definition, create a definition together. I know that's easier said than done. And then use that strong-willed trait to your advantage. And make sure that you're being strong-willed about the things that will maximize your marriage. Lastly, leverage your spouse's strengths. Listen, husbands, you can't be married and serve your wife with an ego. You can lead with an ego, but only after you serve without an ego. So you missed it. The ego is not a bad thing, but the ego needs to be in check and balanced. It needs to be in alignment. And the only way to get that in alignment is to make sure that you're serving first, so that your wife, your equal, your spouse, your mirror, will then help to balance out the parts of you that may grow wild and out of control if you didn't have that accountability, okay? But leverage your strengths. Maximize hers and maximize his. If you see he's good at something, don't try to hide it from him. Affirm it. If you see she's good at something, support her, encourage her, help her grow in that space. Help her, put her in the forefront, right? You don't got to lead everything, and you shouldn't be leading everything. Now, I want to move forward because I got two more questions, but I do want to say that in my book, The 37 Laws to Mastering Marriage, there are two laws that will help with this. Well, there are a lot, but two that come to mind. The first one is the law of the assist. And I really want you to go and read that, because that law is really about setting your spouse up for success. Thus, the law of the assist. But it's important, and I talk about how to incorporate that into your marriage. The other one is the law of spousal influence. And this one is probably the most permeated law. This is going to be etched and woven throughout the fabric of your marriage. So I ain't even going to take the time to talk all about that law right now, because that can be a whole like series of episodes. But I instead implore you to go and check it out in the book, The Law of Spousal Influence, one of the 37 laws. Trust me, it'll work. Okay? Okay, let me go and play the third question, and then I will be back to answer it. See you in a bit.
I have a marriage question for you. In this day and age, there seems to be a lot of people that are married but are in different locations part of the time. So my question is, could you really have a successful marriage if you spend a lot of your time in other locations due to work, or choice, can that really be a marriage that is successful and happy? Or do you need to spend a certain amount of time together in order to have a happy, fulfilled marriage? So that's my question for you. Thank you so much.
Okay, so this is another good question because it talks about having a happy marriage. Here's that theme again, happy marriage, right? With limited proximity. And I want to give you a few pointers to just think about so that you could, if you're in this type of situation, which not every marriage is going to have the same conditions. There are going to be some people, like if you're married to a lawyer or a physician or an athlete, a football player, basketball player, whatever the case may be, there's going to be a lot of like them gone and decreased proximity. Should that mean y'all don't get married? No, I'm not saying that. And I am saying though that what I will say is that the marriages that have the most proximity tend to be the healthiest. However, COVID exposed a lot of y'all. Like for real, during COVID, my business grew. It's weird, but I understand because now y'all had no choice but to be quarantined with each other. And that level of proximity exposed a lot of the issues that y'all were struggling with. Whereas the proximity, you could hide some of that. You can hide the fact that y'all don't communicate as well, or there's a lack of intimacy in one or a few of the areas, right? But COVID forced y'all to be in the same room in the same house. And it showed that, wait, we do lack a lot of stuff. So proximity in and of itself isn't the thing that will make your marriage grow. It's how you manage it. But I will say the healthier marriages tend to have increased proximity, where the unhealthy marriages tend to struggle with proximity. All right, let me go and give you some pointers on what to do with this, if this is you. I'll say it this way. It does depend on what both of you guys deem to be a happy marriage. Again, here's this theme again. You guys have to both be responsible for determining what a happy marriage means for you, for your marriage, not for you individually, okay, but for the marriage as a whole. Remember, your marriage is a garden. You got to be responsible for what the garden has, what it looks like, what it produces. And you have, both of you have to be responsible for determining what a happy marriage really looks like. And I could spend more time talking about the dangers of looking for a happy marriage, because the term happy is so elusive and it is really dependent on the day of the week, how your stomach is feeling in the moment, what you got going on, good or positive. You should be more so looking for marriages that produce the fruit of the Spirit. You want marriages that produce joy, and you want marriages that produce fruit, and you want marriages that produce peace. Okay? Happiness will come and go, but those things, they stay longer. And as a byproduct, they tend to permeate deeper and further. Okay. But anyway, the first thing is it depends on what you deem to be happy, on what both of you guys deem to be happy. Also, often both spouses bring into the marriage what they want, what they perceive happiness to be, but they never take the time to discuss and thus negotiate happiness. And then I want you to remember this. Happiness should be negotiated. Y'all should be talking about, this is what makes me happy. This is what makes me happy. Are you able to do this? Are you able to do this? Okay, well, if you can't do 100% of this, even 70% of this would make me happy. Because guess what? Every other area in your life, you negotiate happiness, right? You get this job and you want the job that's going to make you happy. You ain't going to just go in there and accept all of the terms. You're going to negotiate. That's what the interview process and the acceptance is all about is, yeah, you know what? How about you going to offer me 90K? I want to take 95. Or, okay, if I can't take 95, I want to increase in the amount of, you know, PTO that I have. Or, okay, I can't do that. I want benefits. You guys are negotiating these things. And so why do we expect that in every other area of our lives, we can negotiate, but in our marriage, it is simply expected that you should be willing, capable, and efficient with making each other happy without being able to qualify yourself first and the other person. It's just expected that you got to do what I want you to do, or you got to do meet these criteria to make me happy. Whereas in every other area of your life, you are negotiating that, right? You do it with parenting. You do, trust me, you do negotiate happiness with parenting. Right? Okay, I'll stay up tonight. You do it tomorrow. Can you watch the kid? Can you, right? There's a way we do it. We do it in all the other areas of our lives. But when it comes to marriage, we don't negotiate. So here's what you do. Negotiate happiness before you start creating a lifestyle where there is a decrease in proximity. Negotiate what you will need from each other in order to be content, in order to be happy, in order to be peaceful and joyous in your marriage. Don't just get married, create a lifestyle, then get frustrated with that lifestyle because it's not serving or making you happy. No, talk about it first. Because perhaps, you know what, you're in law school, I'm in med school, we about to go graduate, you're going to be a lawyer, I'm going to be a physician. If we get married, will our marriage, can it contain our lifestyles? And you guys should be able to say yes or no to that. Do not push through just because y'all are in love with each other. No, negotiate. I'm going to be working 16-hour shifts, and then I'll be off 3 days a week. What are your thoughts about that? Is that okay? Because I really prefer this career field. So, like, is that okay? Are you willing to, what are you willing to accept with that, right? And have a conversation. And if you really want the relationship bad enough, you're going to have to be willing to make some compromises. Again, you compromise in every other area of your life. Do not expect that marriage should be the one area that you don't get to compromise. It's not how it works. And compromise is not a bad thing if you know how to do it efficiently, right? But negotiate happiness before you start creating a lifestyle where there's a decrease in proximity. If you really value quality time, if that's your love language, and you get married, and now all of a sudden your spouse decides to take on this position, and y'all take on this position because it's financially beneficial, but for the marriage, it strips you of the things you need, then you did it backwards. Instead, talk about this first. Look, we about to have a child. What are your thoughts about what this means for us? When Mandy and I had Zay, on the way home, because Mandy had a natural birth, bless her body for having that natural birth. So that meant that she wasn't going to be in the hospital, or we weren't in the hospital, we were at a birthing center, but she wasn't going to be there overnight. So Mandy had the baby at midnight. We left about 5 or so in the morning. And on the way home, as I drove, and that little tiny baby was in the back, and Mandy was laid up in the passenger side, we had a conversation. And we was like, look, this is going to change everything. The quality of life that we had, and we had been married around 9, 10 years before we had Zaya. And we had to have the conversation. Look, this is going to change everything. This is going to change how much intimacy we share, how much independence we have, how much free time we have. We used to be able to rip and run and get up and go whenever we wanted. And now, guess what? We got a little person that we're going to have to be very mindful of. And she will not care how tired we are. She will want and consume everything that we have. And so what does this look like? What does intimacy look like? What does sex look like? What does communication look like? What does date nights look like? We were going on date nights every Friday, up until Zaya came. And then we had to renegotiate, right? And that's what you're going to have to do in order to maintain whatever you guys define as happiness. But do not just create a lifestyle without having that conversation first, okay? So negotiate your happiness. And I will say that from my book, The 37 Laws to Mastering Marriage, the law of expectations is a great law to study to ensure that you are doing this process properly. Okay. And remember, as a husband and as a wife, you guys should be doing things to enhance your marriage, which is why this podcast, which is why both of you guys are here on the couch in the Marriage Counselor's Corner, because you guys are doing things to enhance your marriage. But don't just stop here, right? Pick up the book. Trust me. Pick up the book and read it. Study it. This stuff is vetted. It works. Okay. And if it's not my book, pick up somebody's book. Dr. Gottman has a lot of great information in books, right? But not even him. Miles Monroe, John Maxwell. There's tons of people out there that have written stuff that you can read and consume and listen to that will take your marriage to the next level. But if you so choose to, The 37 Laws to Mastering Marriage is your best bet. Just saying, I'm a little biased towards that, but it's really good stuff. But anyway, let me move on to the fourth and final question. Guys, I have actually enjoyed this Q&A session, and I hope that the information that I'm sharing resonates with where you are, and you could take these keys and apply them in your marriage. So let's go on to the last question. Okay, so I was contemplating asking this question because I really don't care about being canceled because who God has for me, the people that God has for me and the people that I'm supposed to serve, they'll be there regardless of, you know, who cancels me. But I got to ask this, I got to answer this question that was asked to me. And I'm just going to be honest, some of y'all may not like what I got to say. Just going to put that out there. But just listen first and react afterwards. But listen first, okay? So here's my fourth and final question. This one is a doozy. It's a loaded question, but it's also a very simple question. Here it is. Why do women struggle with accountability? Now, I can take away women and put in the word wives. So why do wives struggle with accountability? So before y'all, let me just give me some grace, but hear my heart, okay? Now, first off, my answer will be based off of what I have experienced clinically as a therapist with 19 years in the field, who see and work with individuals literally on an almost daily basis. So I'm going to answer from that perspective. Also, that does mean that the people that I tend to deal with, they are already coming into counseling for a certain set of reasons. So that's going to also be a subset of the population. So I can't paint a whole broad stroke and say all women. And I know this person that was asking, and I'm sure they didn't mean all, as in every single woman that is in existence. However, this is an important question that I need to answer. So I'll say it this way, okay? Because I ain't going to beat around the bush. First off, not all women struggle with accountability. However, I have found that a lot of women do struggle with accountability. Now, but let me be clear. When I say a lot of women struggle, I'm not saying all or most. I'm also not saying they struggle more than men, but they do struggle with accountability. Okay. And I'm going to explain why. So I'm going to clear this up. As a matter of fact, I found that in my counseling experience, there are really only two types of women who struggle with accountability. See, if you would have zoned out, you would have missed this part. There's only really two types of women that I have found professionally that struggle with accountability. The two types are the wounded wife or the weary wife. And sometimes they can look the same, but it's usually two different types of wives. The wounded wife and the weary wife. Now, let me talk about the first type, which is the wounded wife. Now, the wounded wife, she's been scorned. She's been damaged. She has been wounded by the behaviors, the words, the conditions of her spouse and the marriage, such that she struggles with trusting anyone who appears to not be interested in sharing in her emotional distress. See, wounded wives tend to desire someone who can protect their woundedness and thus support their current emotional distress. And if the person that they're going to or communicating with doesn't appear to do that, they become more defensive. And thus, the appearance of struggling with accountability comes to the surface because this is their declaration of independence. They get to a place where they would much rather trust themselves over the words of someone else who's not willing to acknowledge, identify, and even spend time sharing space with their emotional distress. I've had certain moments and sessions like this where the wife can ask me or, you know, they can come in, I got to read the husband his rights, respectfully so. And then when it's the wife's turn for her rights to be read, she shuts down because she's wounded because of what the husband has done. And she's looking for me, the therapist, to share in that space. And so I have to be really careful because sometimes I have to share in that space. And then sometimes I've learned that too many people have already been sharing in that space, and now she needs a more refined version of the truth. Not to say I'm the bearer of all truth, but I now have to be objective. Okay. And The appearance of her struggling with accountability is merely just her way of saying, I have to now protect myself. Because anytime I've submitted or opened myself up to be vulnerable, and she's really referring back to her husband, and even beyond that, perhaps someone from her childhood, anytime she's done that, she's gotten wounded. And thus she learns to trust herself more than others. And people that trust themselves more than others are less accountable to others. Okay? And so the wounded woman tends, or the wounded wife tends to struggle with accountability because of those reasons. It's not just because she wants to be defiant, or she wants to not be accountable, or she wants to not submit. Okay? It's not about that. It's about being wounded, and now she's in a self-preserved position. Now, let me move to the second one, the weary wife. See, the weary wife is a little different than the wounded wife. The weary wife struggles with accountability because of a lack of an efficient return on her investment. See, she's done all the trusting, done all the submitting, right? And she's done all of the, you know, let me go to these seminars and go to counseling, and let me bring my husband with me. And she's done all the things to submit, to try to make things work. She's done all the work. And she's found that submission inside of her marriage, trying to fix and work on her marriage, she's come to the realization that that position comes with a price that is more than she has to offer. She's run out of what she has to pay. She doesn't have enough to give, because you can only give away what you have, right? And so she's gotten to the place where she's like, look, I've done things your way, and your way isn't working. She's referencing her husband. Your way is not working anymore. So now it's time for me to take the wheel. So weary wives tend to struggle with accountability because she gets tired of submitting to faulty leadership. So now she has to take the wheel, and now she has to lead. And guess what? If the husband wants to lead, but she's leading, she ain't gonna listen to you that much, or she ain't gonna submit to your authority because your authority is not efficient. Okay? See, hear me clearly. What I'm about to say may sound misogynistic, but it's not. Trust me. Just listen to the words first. Okay? See, it is in a wife's nature to submit to healthy and efficient leadership. Remember, I didn't say it's in a female's nature. I said it's in a wife's nature. In a wife. It is in a wife's nature to submit to healthy and efficient leadership. Most women that I've worked with, that I know, and that I've met, most women don't want to lead. But many will lead as a byproduct of mismanaged and misaligned leadership, right? I see more women leading, but they don't want to. And they get weary. They get tired. It's exhausting, right? And so they stop submitting to accountability because the accountability, the person they're submitting to, they're mismanaging their position. Also, if the wife struggles with accountability, it's usually because, hear me clearly, this is the take-home message for many of y'all. If she struggles with accountability, it's usually because her husband doesn't know how to fully submit to her. So y'all thought I was just going to focus on the wife submitting to the husband. But if she struggles with accountability, it's probably because he struggles to know how to fully submit to her. She sees his flaws while he refuses to see them, and thus producing the conditions that produce the wounded or the weary wife. Now, I'm not saying that it's the husband's fault, right, that she struggles with accountability. What I am saying, though, is that if she does struggle with accountability in the marriage, most likely it is because of an issue with leadership. Go to her job. Look at how she performs on her job. My guess is that she does well on her job because the leadership is functioning. But if the leadership is awry there, guess what? She ain't gonna stay there too long, okay? So just think about that. Again, I could stay there all night, but this is important. And I would say, check out my book, The Law of the Safe Place. That's one law that you can go to really understand what I mean when I talk about influence, accountability, submission. All that is explained in The Law of the Safe Place, right? So check that out. And yeah, this will be good for you. This will be good. All right, so here's what I'll do. I want to wrap up here because I've already been on for almost 40 minutes. And I didn't expect to be on this long, but y'all know your boy can talk. And I love this stuff. So I'll wrap up here. And listen, y'all heard me reference my book, the 37 laws to mastering marriage. I'm not just plugging it because I wrote it. I'm plugging it because it's a great resource. But I'm also saying there are other resources out there as well. But if you don't have the book, if you don't have the 37 laws to mastering marriage, you can easily go to masteringmarriagelaws.com. Go right on your phone, masteringmarriagelaws.com, and you'll find my book there. I got it on auto. I got an audio book, ebook, or paperback. You can also go to Amazon and just search the 37 laws to mastering marriage in Amazon, and my book will come up. Read the reviews. If you don't trust the book, read the reviews. The reviews will tell you like how good the book is, okay? But check it out, masteringmarriagelaws.com, or go to Amazon and search the 37 laws to mastering marriage. All right, guys, I'm going to wrap up here, and I just want to say thank you for coming into your session, your Q&A session, your mini coaching session at the Counselor's Corner. I hope the couch was comfortable, and I would like for you guys to join me in my next episode, episode number 7, where guess what? I'm going to be talking about a very important topic that, okay, wives, y'all going to want to hear this one. Husbands, y'all might not like what I'm sharing because I'm sharing secret weapons. I'm sharing the things that men don't like to talk about around women. So in episode 7, I'm going to talk about the 5 P's to masculinity. You don't want to miss it. This one's going to be a very important episode. Okay. So stick around for that. That'll come out next week on Monday. And other than that, I really appreciate you guys. I really appreciate your time, your energy. Make sure that you are going and subscribing, sharing, liking, leave me some honest rating and reviews. That way these podcasts can be promoted in a couple of the podcast groups or podcast platforms. This podcast was actually becoming a top rank. At one point, it was number 12. So I really appreciate you guys for supporting this. We're listened to in almost 200 countries, literally. I mean, it's amazing. So thank you for just your engagement and your feedback. And also go to marriagecounselorscorner.com. If you want to ask a question, you can send a voicemail in. I'll play it live if I do another Q&A episode or when I do, because I like this. So I think I'm going to do another one. Anyway, guys, I'm done. I appreciate your time. Hey, let me know if you have any additional questions. Otherwise, I will see you in episode number 7 of the Marriage Counselor's Corner podcast. Until then, stay out of trouble, stay focused, and I'll talk to you soon. Deuces.
Thanks for stopping by for your seat on the couch at the Marriage Counselor's Corner. Remember, go to marriagecounselorscorner.com to schedule your next session. Also, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast so that you never miss a session. We look forward to having you back on the couch soon. Bye-bye now.